his name right. Was it David Jansen? I thought Ben Gazzara was the second one. All righty. There's a difference of facts here. All right. Okay. Maybe that's what I'm thinking. All right. But anyway, but I did. I remember Ben Gazzara too. All right. I mean, every week they would almost catch him and then he'd get away. And I mean, it was one of those things where, as they would say, it was must-see TV. Of course, as a kid growing up, I liked television. I mean, one time I quit football just so I could watch Batman. You know, I mean, I love television. Friday nights was the best night. Because on Friday night, I mean, it had the Wild Wild West, and it had the Man from U.N.C.L.E. And I mean, if you got those two things on the same night, it was just good. And I'm telling you, I guess I was a spoiled kid. Even though it was black and white TV, I had a little one about that big in my room. And I could shut my door and not be bothered. Evidently, my youngest daughter got some of that. Okay? She likes to go up to her room and not be bothered. But tonight, we're going to look at 1 Samuel 19. And we're going to see David as he begins running from Saul. And Saul is trying to kill him. You remember on three different occasions now, he's tried to kill him with a javelin. He has sent him into the heat of battle on a couple of occasions, trying to let the Philistines kill him. Well, he began sending messengers to David's house. We learned that a couple of weeks ago. And he tried to get Jonathan on board with it. Jonathan wasn't buying it. As a matter of fact, he took up for David and tried to get his father to lay off of David. And he did when there was a little Philistine flare-up. He sent David to deal with it. He dealt with it. And then he ends up getting married to Saul's youngest girl, Michal. Well, 2 weeks ago when we were finishing up the message, we got through verse number 11. Saul is still seeking his life. Well, Michal somehow came across this information, and she told David, she said, "If thou save not thy life tonight, tomorrow thou shalt be slain." In other words, you've got to save it tonight or you're going to die. May I just simply comment at the beginning of this run? Not only could Saul not kill David because he was under the protection of God, God's hand protected that young man. Saul could not kill him. He couldn't even arrest him. Now you think about that a moment. Every time he tried to arrest him, it failed. He would send people to kill him. It failed. And we're going to see finally David understands. He's not giving Saul the benefit of the doubt anymore. Now he's running. Let's look at verse 12. So Michal let David down through a window. He went and fled and escaped. And Michal took an image. The word image there is an idol. The Hebrew word is a teraphim. It's an idol that is not a little small idol like a person would put on the dashboard of a car, but it's not as big as a mannequin that would be in a department store window. This is probably something that's about that tall. Maybe we would identify the size like the bust of a person. You know, you've got a bust of George Washington as our first president. You see his head and shoulders and part of his chest. And perhaps that's what the image was. She lays it in a bed, and she put a pillow of goat's hair for his bolster, for the cushion of it. And I have the vision of a wig stuck on a, I don't even know what these things are called, but women would take a little head and have different color hair wigs on it. What is that called, ladies? A what? A head form? I guess that would be as close as I can think of. But anyway, you know what I'm talking about. It may be made out of styrofoam. A what? It's a head? All right, well, that makes sense. All right, so anyway, this idol looks like a head. Evidently, it was about that size. So she takes goat hair. I'm wondering what the texture of David's hair was. And she puts it on, and I guess because maybe it's dark, and then she puts cushions in the bed. And she covers it with a cloth. She takes some type of quilt or bedspread and covers it over the concoction that she has put together so that it looks like a person laying there with their maybe cover pulled up next to their face and only their hair is showing. The big question that I've got is this. What is David doing letting his wife have a pagan image at their house? Now you think about that a moment. David is a man after God's own heart. He knows all about being a shepherd because God taught him that as a teenage boy. And maybe he doesn't know about it, but it's hard not to see something that size in your house. It would aggravate me if I had something in the house that I didn't think was honoring to the Lord. Let me tell you a story that happened with my wife. This was something that evidently bothered her. Didn't bother me at all. I thought it was just wonderful. When we got married, I had an outboard motor. It wasn't a big one. It was a little Mercury, and it was called the Gnat. I got me some 2x4s, and I built me a stand for my outboard motor. I guarantee you that motor was no bigger than that in length and that in width. And I built that stand. I mean, I could walk around with it one hand. Wasn't no big deal. Well, before we got married, she was living in the dormitory, and I'd already moved into the little apartment. Well, I took that outboard motor, and I put that in the corner of the living room. All right? Well, it wasn't bothering nobody. Well, when we got married, she's coming in. That's her. It's her kingdom. She's the queen. She goes, "We don't need that outboard motor in this living room." Now, when I say living room, I mean the whole thing. We had four rooms in this apartment, maybe. You had a bedroom which was connected to the living room, the bedroom was connected to a kitchen about four times as big as this pulpit. And then you had a big tub. It was off to the side. The tub was where I washed dishes when she didn't know it. And so I come in one day. She told me, she said, "Dr. Davis," the same Dr. Davis that's with BIA, "I was telling Dr. Davis that you've got an outboard motor and that that you might sell it." And I said, "I'm not selling my motor." Well, he said he would give us a half a beef. He's raising a cow. And I said, "I don't want the cow. I want my motor." I mean, I'd paid for that motor by the month. I liked that motor. I'd gone up and down the Ogeechee River with that motor. I mean, you could get a little small aluminum boat and you could fish on that river. I mean, that thing would push an aluminum boat. It wasn't pushing a fiberglass, but it'd push an aluminum. Well, we clicked along for a few days, and I come in one day, and I'm thinking, something's just not right. And then finally it dawned on me. That motor's gone. She gave that boat to Dr. Davis for a half a cow. There's nobody in this church tonight, and I hope Dr. D don't hear this. There is nobody in this church tonight that's got a pair of shoes on with leather that was any tougher than that meat. It was just a little bitty thing about the size of this idol. But what's she doing with it? I mean, what's she doing with it? Well, I guess we can ask David when we get to heaven. You say, can we ask Mikkel? I'm not sure she's there. She's got some issues. Now, she starts off trying to do a good thing, but I'm going to tell you something. The gal will lie at a heartbeat. I mean, she's lying. First time her daddy comes, what happens? Well, Saul sends messengers to take David. And she said, he's sick. Well, you know, in wartime, I mean, I'm not sure that God would hold it against somebody to lie to save a life. So I'm trying to cut her a little slack here, all right? And after all, David has not been gone that long, and so they may could run him down if they sent the posse after him. Well, so they come and they tell David or tell Saul that he's sick. So he sends messengers back again. And he said, you bring him up to me. You bring him into bed if you've got to. Why? That I may slay him. So he's still trying to kill him. But remember, he can't even arrest him, much less kill him, because God has him protected. Which gives us great confidence when we are in the will of God for our lives, there's nothing that can get to us. I have people say, where would you go in this world if you knew you were in the will of God? I would say I would go anywhere. Because it's safer in some God-forsaken place of this world in the will of God than walking in Loganville, Georgia, outside of the will of God. And so the will of God is where we want to be. That's where we want to be as a church, in the perfect will of God. Well, what takes place? They come in, verse 16, and there was an image in the bed. Pillow of goat's hair for his bolster. Saul calls his daughter, and he says to her, why hast thou deceived me so? Well, I can think of one reason. You taught her that way. He's been a manipulative type man, so evidently she learned well. I just thought of a second reason. I believe that her loyalty should be to her husband, for it's to her daddy. When a man and a woman get married, that is the primary relationship outside of God in that person. The husband and the wife relationship supersedes a parent-child relationship or a parent-grandparent or a grandchild and a grandparent relationship. It is the number one priority. I remember hearing a story years ago about a father, and the wife had died, and the daughter came home with her husband and with the children. And they went through all of the funeral and the grieving process, and they had been there for 2 or 3 weeks, and finally it was time to go home. The husband said, we need to go back and take care of some things at home. And the daughter told her dad, said, Dad, we've got to leave. And he said, don't leave me. Your mother's just died. You need to stay with me and be with me. And he began to cry. And the daughter said, Dad, we've got to go home. And I mean, he was following out to the car. And finally, the husband looked over at the wife and said, if you need to stay another 3 or 4 weeks, I'll understand. We'll be okay. And she said, no. You are my husband. Drive on. Now, that's hard. But the bottom line is the husband and the wife relationship is primary. And so, why hast thou done this to me? Well, you taught me this way. He's my husband. That's not what she says. She doesn't say that at all. Notice what she does say. And Michal answered Saul. He said unto me, let me go. Why should I kill thee? There's nothing in the text. There's nothing in David's character. There's nothing in his history that would even insinuate that he would hurt this woman. Not a thing. But yet, in the original, according to a couple of the commentators that I looked at, when he says, why should I kill thee? It has the idea, why should I kill you like I'm going to kill your father? So basically she was saying, I was scared, Daddy, because he talked like he was going to kill you and me if I didn't help him. She's lying. And so here she is with an opportunity to do like Jonathan did. What did Jonathan, her brother, do? Jonathan took up for David. Jonathan said, Dad, you're wrong about this guy. He's done nothing but good for you. Oh, but not Michal. And so we see that she is lying. Well, when we get to verse 18, the scene changes. We go from David running, Michal lying, to where David has now escaped to. And this is where I'll spend the majority of our time this evening. And I'm going to give you 4 or 5 things at the end of the commentary that I'm giving right now that I think are good that we can glean from this passage. So David fled and escaped and came to Samuel. It's a while since we've seen Samuel. You got to remember something now. Samuel is an old man now. He's been through the wars. I mean, he has battled. He has prayed. He has prophesied. He is the man still in all of Israel. You remember he started out as a little bitty boy. His mama Hannah dropped him off after he had been weaned, and he began to serve the old high priest Eli. And then when Eli died, Samuel became established in Israel and all of Israel, from Dan way up in the north to Beersheba way down in the south. They knew that there was a prophet in Israel. And all these years, decades have passed, and the old man now still remembers David. Why? Because it's only been just a handful of years ago that this old prophet of God went to Jesse's house and went by every one of those boys. And finally he said, do you have any more? He said, we got a little one way out there in the sheepfold. Go get him. And he brought little David in and anointed him to be the next king over Israel. Well, he's back to see Samuel. And where is Samuel at? Samuel is at a place called Ramah. That's where Samuel lived. And at Ramah, just on the outskirts, there was a little place where there was a Bible college. And so as he talks to Samuel, he just goes and he dwells at a place called Naioth. Now, what is Naioth? It's not a village, except it's a makeshift village. It does not have a name. It's not like Capernaum. I didn't mention this morning because of time, but Nahum had a village named after him. I don't think he probably knew anything about it, but when you visit Israel or if you read anything, you'll hear about a little place called Capernaum. And Caper, C-A-P-E-R in the English, that means village of Nahum. Well, here you've got Naioth, and it's a little village, and basically it's tents and huts. And it's probably where the Bible college students were living. You say, how do you know that they were Bible college students? Well, if you look at verse number 20, you'll see the little phrase, the company of the prophets. The word company means a school. There was a group of prophets here at Ramah, and Samuel was the dean. He was the president of the place. And so, what does, I guess, the story unfold after that? It goes that he dwelt at Naioth, and in verse 19, Saul was told about it. Said David's at Naioth in Ramah. In other words, he's over somewhere near those tents where those college kids are. And Saul sent messengers to take David. And when they saw the company or the school of the prophets prophesying, and Samuel, an old man of God, standing as appointed over them, the Spirit of God was upon the messengers of Saul. Of Saul now, not the college kids, but of Saul, because they saw what was happening with the college kids and with the man of God that was with them. And what happened? They also prophesied. Not only that, it was told Saul, he sent another group of messengers. And the Spirit of God came upon them. They began prophesying just like the first group. And so now there's two groups from Saul that the Spirit of God has come upon. Verse 21, latter part, he sends messengers again the third time. They prophesied also. Three groups now that are prophesying that the Spirit of God has come upon. Do you get the idea that when the Spirit of God moves, that you got to do what the Spirit of God wants you to do? I mean, when God says you're going to do this, it's like, you're going to do this. And so Saul, he doesn't understand this. He's thinking, what's the matter with these guys? I guess if you got to do something right, you got to do it yourself. If you want it done right, you just got to do it yourself. And so in verse 22, he also went to Ramah. And he came to a great well that is in Sichem. You say, where is that at? Well, evidently it's north of Ramah. It's just a geographical place, all right? I remember hearing when I first moved to Between, I remember hearing something about a community called Split Silk, all right? And at one time, there was a Baptist church in Split Silk. And I knew the guy that pastored it. He had spent some time on the staff of the church I was saved at, down in Savannah. And so if you go through there, I don't think you'll find many markings that says the city of Split Silk. It's just known as the community of Split Silk. You know, at least I've never seen a sign that says that. The community that I live in, between. I tell people I live in between, and they say, between what? It's like, well, I'm between Monroe and Loganville, you know, between Athens and Atlanta, you know. Or if you, I guess if you want to, you could say, you know, between the North and South Poles, for all I know, all right? But it's a community. Sichu. Well, Saul's there, and he asks, where's Samuel and David? And one said, behold, they be at Naoth and Ramah. They're over in the tent city. They're where those Bible college kids live. You know where all those tents are at. They got them things scattered out there like ants. They don't care what they live in. I mean, they're just happy to be around God's man, learning from God's word. That's what they're happy about. And so in verse 23, he went thither to Naoth and Ramah, and something happened to him. The Spirit of God was upon him also. He's already got three groups of messengers that the Spirit of God has come upon. And now the Spirit of God is upon this guy. And you say, I wonder why the Spirit of God would come upon him. Well, I want you to mark your place here. And I want you to go back to 1 Samuel chapter 10. In 1 Samuel chapter 10, I think this is where it's at. Yeah, look at verse number 10. 1 Samuel 10:10. And when they came thither to the hill, behold, a company of prophets met him. There's them Bible college kids again. And the Spirit of God came upon him, and he prophesied among them. And it came to pass, when all that knew him before time, or before he had been anointed to be the king, behold, he prophesied among the prophets. And the people said one to another, what is this that has come unto the son of Kish? Is Saul also among the prophets? And one of the same place answered and said, but who is their father? Therefore it became a proverb, is Saul also among the prophets? At the beginning of his ministry, it's almost as though God was giving him a great, great opportunity. But now many years have passed between chapter 10 and chapter 19, where we're at now. Many years have passed. You see, Saul would be the king for 40 years. David would be a king for 40 years. And Solomon would be a king for 40 years. And so you've got him way back at the beginning, just before really his ministry or his kingdom, his reigning began. And now we're probably about into the 30-year mark in our passage tonight. And the Spirit of God comes upon him, and he begins to prophesy the same way that the messengers did, all three groups of messengers. And what takes place with him? Well, verse 24, he strips off his clothes. Now, before you go, wow, that has the idea that he took his armor off and probably took his outer tunic off, because anytime anybody took their outer coat off, it was as though in ancient times that you were naked. And so when it says that he lay down naked all day and all that night for a 24-hour period, he is there under the influence of the Spirit of God. Wherefore they say, is Saul also among the prophets? You know what the question is? Is he going to Bible college? I mean, he's acting like these college kids. He's acting like these other messengers. Is he getting serious about a call to preach? I don't think so. The reason is because I think that he's been hardened. But every once in a while, maybe you like to reminisce a little bit. I think early on he had an opportunity to see some great things happen. But his heart was not good. The same God that tenderized David's heart, when that pressure was put on Saul, his heart became hard. Many years ago, I heard someone describe when it says that God hardened Pharaoh's heart over in Exodus. They described it this way. They said, you have a sun that is bright and hot. And that sun can do two things. That sun can melt the wax on a candle where that wax is soft and pliable. But that same sun can take mud and bake it and make it a brick to build a wall or a home out of. It all depends on what the heat is going toward. David was like that candle. And when God had pressure on him, he was a man after God's own heart. But Saul, when he had that heat put on him, he became hardened, much like Pharaoh became hardened. The same source, but a different outcome. And so you've got him there. Is he among the prophets? Well, yeah, but he's not going to be going to school. It's just that the Spirit of God has come upon him to give David a chance to escape one more time. Now, I want to give you five quick things and we'll be done. Why does David go to Ramah? Why Ramah? Well, I think the simple reason is this. The man of God's there. Why do people come to church when they get in trouble? When everything's great, everybody's got money in the bank, health's good. Well, I might go to church today, may not. Hadn't really decided. Oh, but you get them sick. Or you get them under a financial strain. And then they'll come. Oh, but sometimes when things are going great, we have a tendency to just kind of forget God. Well, let me tell you something. David's under a strain. Now, he knows that God has protected him. But I'm going to tell you something. I don't care if your name's David or John the Baptist or Tommy Foskey. There are times when life's pressures come at you and you get down. You say, not me. I'm going to have to watch you because you might lie about something else. Why did he go to Ramah? I believe that he wanted to be around the man of God because, number one, it strengthened his faith. It strengthened his faith. There's something about being around God's work that helps you. I don't know about you, but the service this morning, it helped me today. When those two folks got baptized, that helped me today. When I hear people say, man, that was a good word today, that helps. And when it seems like that the devil is sitting on your shoulder, being around God's work, it just kind of gives you strength for the journey. And so I believe that he ran to Rhema to get his strength and, or to get his faith strengthened. Number two, I believe that he ran to Rhema to get godly counsel. You ought to want good counsel. But good counsel is godly counsel. Proverbs tells us there's wisdom in the multitude of counselors. I believe our young people ought to have good counselors. I think that first of all, if you've got godly parents, you ought to go to them and ask them stuff. I do. I believe that. I believe that you ought to pick people in the field that you're interested in and pick their brain if they're godly people. I think that you ought to ask godly Sunday school teachers their advice. I think that teenagers ought to ask godly deacons their advice. I think if they've got confidence in a pastor, I think they ought to ask his advice. Every week of the world, I'll get a phone call and somebody will ask me something, and I'm thinking, you know, I hope I can give them a biblical answer and not make something up. But I believe that he went to Rhema. Why? Because he had confidence in the man of God. And that's where he ran. And may I say that not just teenagers need godly counsel, but we adults need godly counsel. We need to have discernment. And sometimes you can have people that have a few more gray hairs than you have, or have a few less hairs than you have. And they can give you a direction that maybe you've not really considered, or a perspective that you've not thought about. I think he ran to Rhema to receive comfort, because let's face it, he was in an uncomfortable place. He's in a palace where all the luxuries that could be afforded at that particular time were offered. But I'm going to tell you something. When a guy keeps trying to throw a javelin through you, there's not a lot of comfort there. You know, when you don't know when he's going to go off, there's not a lot of comfort there. Proverbs says this. He said, Solomon said, I'd rather live in the corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman. Let me tell you something. You can have the greatest mansion in all the world, but if it's nothing but fussing and fighting, there's no comfort there. I'd rather live in a mobile home. And so he ran to Rhema because he could get some comfort. And when you're tired, you need somebody that you can trust to rest around. Number four, I think he ran to Rhema to have fellowship with some godly people. When you work in the world and you work with a bunch of heathen, it sucks the life out of you. Their values are different than yours. I've already told one story about Deb. I might as well tell a second one. Years ago, after she left the college, she went to work for the phone company. And she worked with one or two other ladies that were there, younger ladies. And, I mean, their language was atrocious. And they were always talking about, you know, the parties and the drinking and all that stuff. And I mean, and the words were just flying. And finally, Deb, I guess, had enough of it one day. And she looked at this one little girl and said, "You know, you're just a beautiful young lady. Do you really kiss your mother with that mouth?" You know, you don't have to put up with that a lot of times at God's house. Man, God's house is a place where you can come and you can shake hands and you can smile and, you know, and you can hug a little bit. You got to be careful about that, but you can hug a little bit, all right? You know? I mean, you can just get encouraged. Why? Because you got people that think like you do a little bit. You know, I mean, you don't have to, you know, always be on pins and needles about stuff. I mean, you can just kind of relax and enjoy being around God's people. And so I believe that he needed to be around some people that loved God instead of was suspicious about everything. And then I believe that he went to Ramah to be prayed for by the prophet of God. I want godly people praying for me. I do. When I have people tell me, "We're praying for you," that means a lot to me. I can think of three or four people that tell me that every time I see them. "We pray for you every day." And I said, "Don't stop, because I need it." I want godly people to lift me up before the throne of heaven. And it's my prayer that you have that same idea. So a few questions that we'll have to get answered when we get to heaven. Why did she have that image in her house? God's people ought not have pagan images in their house. David, why'd you put up with that? He may look at me and say, "Well, why'd you do this?" I'm like, "Never mind, we'll just talk about that other stuff." See, if we get too judgmental, before long, we're looking at our brother's speck instead of our 2x4. And so, when I get discouraged, when I need comfort, when I need strength, when I need my faith bolstered, when I need somebody to pray for me, I want to go where godly people are. And I hope that you have that same thought. Let's stand together. I appreciate so much you being here this evening.